Big thanks to HelloFresh.com for supporting Current Geek. Receive $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code CURRENTGEEK30.
I have
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, geeks of the world, and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. My name is Scott Johnson, and with me, as always, Tom Merritt.
Let me tell you, Scott Johnson, it has been a long week, and I cannot think of any way better to wrap it up and head into the weekend than sitting down and talking about some geeky topics with some of the coolest, funnest, smartest people on the internet, and that is why I show up for this every Friday that we do the show.
Oh, man, I hope we can live up to what you just said, because it feels good. What you just said gave me energy. It's like caffeine for the soul. Thank you for that. Woo!
Tell it.
Preach it and all that. Hey, we're here. We're happy to be here, but we're also happier to be here when we have guests, and we do have guests. We always have guests with us today. Let's start with Tawny Plattis. Am I saying it right, Tawny, the last name? I got it right, didn't I? Okay, good.
You did, yes.
I'd feel bad if I didn't. You are the host of the Dirty Bits podcast and a voice actress. So good to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, we're stoked to have you here. And also with us, Aaron Lindsay, also a podcaster. He claims that he started listening to podcasts 10 years ago when I started doing them, and that weirds me out a little bit. But now, a powerhouse in his own right. It's Aaron Lindsay, everybody.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks, Tom. Thank you guys for having me. I'm thrilled.
Well, it's good to have you here, man. If you don't mind me asking, what part of the country are you from? Just curious.
I'm from Nashville, Tennessee.
Ah, man, I love that accent. You can bring that on here anytime. That automatically gets you back in for a future guest spot. So well done there.
It's easy.
Yeah, I like to discriminate based on people's accents.
I'm gonna start talking with an accent.
Yeah, Tom, I need to get that Midwest thing you had going when you were in Illinois. Can you work on that? That'd be great.
Yeah, it's actually closer to Tennessee than it is to Midwest down in Southern Illinois. But.
Good point. All right, well, we're gonna dive right in, and we have geeky headlines.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering. As do many others in high public office.
Tom, what happened since we last spoke?
Well, a Reddit user calling themselves CS Career Throwaway 567, and you'll get why they call themselves that here and shortly, posted this week that they had moved across the country to take a new job as a junior software designer. On their first day, managed to accidentally copy the variables from the manual that they were reading about how to set up a small script to set up a local database. You're supposed to put your own variables in. I've done this myself. They just copied it over without thinking. And apparently the variables in the manual have the effect of clearing all the data from the company's production database. The dev was subsequently asked to leave. And what I think bashes some of those Reddit stereotypes, everybody in this thread essentially was, well, not everybody, but a lot of people in this thread were saying, hey, man, they shouldn't have fired you. That's an honest mistake. Like, that's not really your fault. They shouldn't have put those variables in the manual. I thought people were really supportive of this guy.
Yeah, I would be too. I feel really bad for him. I don't know why the production database doesn't have some mirrored, redundancy. That seems weird to me that's not a thing. So part of that's on those guys. But also part of it's on, you know, what you got to fill the kid in on, you know, what he's supposed to do and when he's supposed to do it. I feel like this is a real bummer for him. Shouldn't be fired. Not his first day anyway. You got to take these things and, you know, move on. I'm sure that they've got everything back. They probably had some backup of yesterday's production database and everything was probably fine. And if they were running, you know, loose and wild without a backup, well, then they're a terrible company. Yeah. A
couple things there. One, they should definitely have had a backup. We don't know that they didn't.
Right.
They should definitely have a backup. And also, this kid kind of found a vulnerability in your database that you should fix.
Yeah, that's what I'd say. You should give him maybe not a raise, but you know, pat him on the back and say, now we know you didn't mean to do this, but you really brought some to our attention. Well done. See you tomorrow. Like, I feel like they responded poorly to this. So, Tawny, if you hired somebody to come take care of all your podcast files, all right? The Dirty Bits podcast, very important. There's no backup. It's just this raw bunch of MP3 files. And the first thing he does is accidentally delete them all. What do you do?
Oh, I fire him right away. It's the the Dirty Bits podcast.
You don't mess with that.
Can never be done again. No.
I mean, let's be clear. Tawny would have a backup. She's smart enough for that. Sure. But in your scenario.
Yeah. I've got redundancy here and then the stuff on the cloud. And then, of course, the actual posts of the shows out there. But I'm probably doing something wrong that somebody could easily, I don't know, figure out that I'm doing wrong and wipe everything out. I don't know. I have no idea. And obviously that company didn't know either. Aaron, would you you think they overreacted here, or should they have kept him on?
Definitely. They definitely overreacted. As a matter of fact, reading through the thread, you know, he had traveled across country to take this job. Yeah. And on his first day made this mistake. And as you said, found an issue with their, the way they do things, obviously. Mm-hmm. And there were lots of stories. There was an example from Amazon just earlier this year where the same thing happened. Mm-hmm. They did have a backup and got things up and running. So as far as I'm concerned, the guy's clear. He would still be working for me, I think.
Well, he's an internet hero now to all of us.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're okay.
If he's on Reddit, he's going to get a new job offer really soon.
Yeah,
I kind of hope so. Yeah. Like, I mean, one of the responses on the thread said, somebody said, look, I made a similar mistake at a job. And the boss said, I said, am I going to get fired? And the boss said, what? You just made a $1 million mistake. I'm not going to waste that money because you'll never make it again. You're the one I can trust.
Well, that's a really good point. I hadn't thought of it that way.
That is a really good point. I think a lot of it has to come down to the reaction of the employee too. So if that guy comes forward and says, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I totally messed up. How can I fix this? I think as an employer, I'd have a lot of compassion on that end.
Yeah.
Especially if you travel across.
And imagine how he must feel. Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh. Like just.
He apparently was trying so hard to do something, anything, even if he didn't get the job, he still wanted to fix this any way possible.
Yeah. I mean, I've deleted an entire show that I just recorded by accident once. One time. It's only ever happened once where it was me who did it. I've had other technical things that have come up. But one time in the thousands of shows I ever produced, I've deleted it myself, had no way to get it back, completely destroyed the file. And I remember feeling horrible then. I can't imagine how that must feel if you compound it with you moved across the country. It's your first day. These are all strangers and people have expectations for you. Like, it's easy for me to feel for this guy. When I did that, my boss was a total jerk. It was me, but he was a huge jerk. He almost fired me, but then I became a weird loop and it was like Time Cop. If you touched me, I'd turn into Ron Silver or something.
Man, that actually reminds me, one time when I was working for a show called The Screensavers on ZDTV, I accidentally commented out most of the homepage of the show's site.
Oh.
Because I had used the content management system would prevent you from doing that unless you forced it to let you put in code, which I did, and then didn't close my comment tag. And I really thought, like, I'm like, oh my gosh, I've screwed this entire thing up. But they're never going to get it back. They're never going to figure out how to fix it.
Yeah.
And of course they did.
Yeah. Well, you just uncomment and you're good to go, right?
But you couldn't do it through the content management system. Somebody had to go to the file on the server and manually edit it. And I didn't have the permission to do that. So.
Yeah. Well, I remember as a viewer of Tech TV being very judgmental of that day, and I didn't even know it went wrong. So
why is this page not loading?
Yeah. What the heck?
Hey, Trent Reznor is going to make the Quake soundtrack. You guys remember the Quake soundtrack? Yeah. It was a big deal at the time because it was the first time like a big name musician had got on board to do a game soundtrack. It's kind of a common thing now. Mm-hmm. But the only way you could listen to it before was to get the Quake CDs. Now Trent Reznor is going to make it available on vinyl. In fact, you can find the listing at nin.com, the Nine Inch Nails website. No price release date yet, but you can keep checking back there.
So back in the day, I know a little bit about this. Back in the day, Trent Reznor became close buddies with John Carmack and John Romero and the guys over at id Software. He was, I guess, a big nut about Doom, loved Doom, loved playing it. And when Quake rolled around, they're like, well, we can do a lot here. We're in the CD age. We can do CD quality audio. We're not limited to MIDI music or whatever they were using for Doom.
The world of CD-ROMs has opened vistas to us.
It really had. So I remember hearing about it ahead of time, them saying, this was like 95 or something, and they said, yeah, Trent Reznor's doing the soundtrack. And I remember flipping out because at the time, I couldn't get enough Trent Reznor in my life. And It's a great soundtrack. It's really good. Quake 2 soundtrack, not Trent Reznor produced, not very good. It's kind of garbage. It's okay, but it's not great. Quake 1, killer soundtrack. So I don't know who wants it on vinyl. I would just like it streaming somewhere. That'd be cool. Or, you know, MP3s would be fine. But Tawny, got any love for the Quake soundtrack or Trent Reznor in general?
The Quake soundtrack, not so much. Trent Reznor in my generation, maybe. I think I'm kind of showing my age here. He's kind of teased a bit, I would say. Mm. He's kind of the emo sad guy. So Trent Reznor is kind of a little amusing to me in concept, because that's kind of what I was raised with.
Yeah.
Because he was just so sad and trying to feel, but I don't know. I do appreciate his music a lot. I would definitely check it out, but maybe not on vinyl. Vinyl's kind of reserved for like my quality, my top quality.
Yeah, you got to go with your big stuff. So, but he's interesting now, right? Because he's not, back then it was studio albums and, you know, MTV and all that, and Quake and some of these other projects. And these days, you know, he works with David Fincher on almost every soundtrack they do for a film. Like, they're really good scores to movies. The Dragon Tattoo soundtrack score is really good. The one for The Social Network is one of my favorite soundtracks ever. And it's so weird to see my childhood music idols, some of them idols, some of them just passersby, but to see them, like him and Danny Elfman and these other guys, being these amazing film score people now, when they used to just be this weird music my parents hated. And and they don't even know. My mom could go see one of these movies and go, oh, I just love the soundtrack. I'm like, Mom.
Barbara Bassey. Yeah. She's amazing.
Yeah, and I'd say, Mom, he's the one that wanted to like an animal back in the day, and you hated that song, Mom. So,
right.
Yeah. Aaron, you're of generation for Reznor. What do you think of this?
You know, as geeky as I claim to be, I'm not familiar with that soundtrack. I'm not familiar with Quake. I mean, I know it's a game, and my buddies have played it, but I never have.
Mm-hmm.
Nine Inch Nails was a little out of my league as well. But I like vinyl.
Yeah. Sweet.
So it's the perfect overlap. Tawny likes everything except for the vinyl for this. You can have the vinyl. Everybody's happy.
That is perfect.
Well done. We always find common ground on this show. I like it. It's perfect.
I know. It's about bringing people together.
Yeah.
Speaking of, a guy named Pain Long, it's P-A-E-N-L-O-N-G, he's Cambodian,
yep,
spent 3 years watching YouTube videos on how to build a plane. And he based a design on a one-seater Japanese plane from the World War II era and built it out of things he could find around his home in Southeast Cambodia. Pilot seat is a plastic chair with chopped off legs. The control panel is a car dashboard. The body is made from an old gas container. His first flight reached 50 meters in the air, but it wouldn't get any higher because his parts were just too heavy. So he's turned to building a seaplane, which he thinks he can make with lighter materials.
Oh my gosh, this is amazing. Like, we get stories like this once in a while where somebody will figure out how to make their own. We had one not long ago where the guy made an iPhone from scratch.
Yeah, right. The whole just thing. Went around buying up parts.
Yeah, didn't have to have anything assembled, found the glass, found the parts, did all the electronics, and ended up with a functional phone based on the core design of an iPhone 7 or 6 or whatever it was, which is really amazing. But that's nothing compared to a dude who's willing to put himself 50 yards in the air or 50 feet in the air and not die. Like, I'm totally impressed with this. I mean, every time you hear about somebody building a potato gun and shooting it at their neighbor's dog, that seems like, you know, the internet's not helping. But this is cool. This is great. Has anybody here, Tawny, you ever had anything you're like, I just have to make my own?
So anybody I'm here going built to the their internet. Own plane?
Yeah.
No, that's incredible. I can barely get my computer to work on a daily basis, let alone build a plane.
It feels like you need a lot of extra time, and I don't know. I don't know,
like knowledge, intelligence, you know, all those random things.
all those things I don't seem to have anymore in copious amounts, but.
No, I can barely change my oil in my Fit, in my Honda.
I'm impressed. I can't even do that in my Ford or whatever it is. Mine's a Ford. I can't do my own oil anymore. I don't know what's going on under there. I look under a car now and I just go, meh, looks like a car maybe is up there.
I'm not even certain the car has oil, so might.
Looks like I'm the closest one to building an airplane here.
I'm impressed.
I think so.
At the very least, you could change the airplane's oil, which is something right there.
Figure it out on YouTube.
Aaron, you're a scrappy guy. You like to throw stuff together. How do you feel about watching YouTube till the end of time to build something?
I do. Actually, my wife does more of this than I do. She built a camp stove out of aluminum foil and a tin can and some kind of house fuel. But as far as the guy building his own plane, I'm afraid I would love to see it fly. I'm very interested. I wouldn't want to be under it while it was flying, and I definitely wouldn't be on it while it was flying.
It'd be well to the side and behind.
Yes. Just maybe with the zoom lens or something. Yeah.
Maybe you can only, maybe it's gotta be like Cambodia to even do something like this. Like if I tried to do this, I guarantee there are neighbors I have who would, well, first of all, I wouldn't have room, but let's say I had room. I have neighbors who would call the cops. They just say there's a dude trying to fly a plane next door. So I feel like
I imagine that's probably the case in Phnom Penh, the capital of Cambodia. No, you're not going to let you build a plane and fly it around there, but he's out in a rural enough area. I think that's kind of the unifying factor of rural areas around the world is, well, nobody's really watching. And if there is law enforcement, you probably know him really well. And like, I won't hurt anything. It's fine.
Yeah. It does bring up the question though, of, as we become more urban, have we limited individuals' opportunities to do innovative things because we have, I don't know, noise laws.
There's actually been studies on that, and you generally get more innovation out of urban areas because there's more exchange of ideas because you have more people talking to each other with different points of view. So in general, you get more innovation out of an urban area, but this kind of experimentation is harder to pull off.
Yeah, sounds like an outlier. But I say congratulations to him. If you can make your own plane and have it fly, even have it fail and then build a water plane.
Entirely built from being instructed on YouTube, right? Yeah,
that's crazy. Like
that's the crazy thing.
Just don't read the comments. Someone should tell him.
Yeah. Nice job, 50 meters. I could have done 60 in my sleep.
Yeah, that's exactly what he would have gotten. Yeah. Or it would have been, it would have devolved into some sort of Hitler analogy and it would have all gone to crap.
Oh, well. Hey, Time Magazine reports Harvard's going to offer a class in folklore and mythology titled The Real Game of Thrones, from Modern Myths to Medieval Models. Now, it's not just branding to trick people into taking a folklore class. The course description says the class will examine how George R. R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire series echoes and adapts as well as distorts the history and culture of the medieval world of Eurasia from 400 to 1500 CE. That's another word for AD, by exploring a set of archetypal characters at the heart of Game of Thrones: the king, the good wife, the second son, the adventurer, and so on, with distinct analogs in medieval history, literature, religion, and legend.
Okay, so I'm kind of okay with this conceptually, but at the end of the day, didn't they just now lay out the tropes that make Martin's books work, and they're kind of universal and they're sort of in every story? Like, part of me thinks there's not a whole course.
Okay, but think of it this way. You could say the same thing about Star Wars, right? Everybody talks about Joseph Campbell and how Lucas took ideas from Joseph Campbell to make Star Wars, but you wouldn't criticize Star Wars and say, well, aren't they just laying bare? It's like, this is a different way to tell the story. And I kind of like this idea of saying, hey, there are these myths and tropes throughout history.
Yeah.
And we see them in George. We see how George R. R. Martin uses them here. How does that compare to how they were actually used in the legends and history of medieval times? That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. A television class might be fun, too, to try to study not just those things, but also... Well,
that crossed my mind that I wonder if the professor here is like, lots of easy days where I just pop in an episode.
I mean, it is crazy to think that those big, hefty tomes that he wrote and is still writing made one of the most must-see TV events of any season during all of its run. Like, a show that was somehow carved from that became a thing you had to be there minute one on Sunday night, not wait for it, not DVR it, but straight up, more people are interested in seeing that and talking about it than many other things on TV. That alone is worthy of study to me. So if they want to start with, like, how is this like Arthurian lore? How is this like Middle Ages or whatever? And how do these tropes work and stuff? That's exciting and all. But I also just think it's fascinating that they were able to turn it into what it is. Like, had this not come along to HBO, it had been like Tom and three of my friends and maybe had heard of the books. They were kind of sort of popular. I mean, the first book came out in the 90s. I hadn't heard of that thing until I met you. Like, it's just such a quiet, weird thing. And then suddenly it's
everywhere. And I heard about it because Veronica brought it up as a choice for Sword and Laser. And that was well before the TV series was considered as either.
Yeah. See, that's just crazy to me. I don't know if I mean, Tawny, later on, you're going to have a topic that's similar to Game of Thrones when we do your topic for your quiz. You may not know what that is yet, so I don't want to give it away. But you like fantasy stuff, right? Would this interest you if you were a young Harvard newbie just getting ready to go to class?
Oh, hell yeah. Of course it would. I'm that person that's there the second it's on HBO, and I'm like, oh, Jon Snow knows nothing. Mm. Like, I'm so excited about that class. I actually did see that pop up on my little news feed, and I was like, I would totally take that. But I think that they could make it more relevant almost, where they could discuss just the parallels between that and just government in general. Like, it's that show is so relevant even today. I feel like it's almost like you're kind of making it smaller. Mm-hmm. As opposed to like what it could be. It could be like such a cooler class than just, you know, oh, and this is how it relates to the stuff at the time. It's like, well, you know, if you're already taking that class, you probably already know that.
And maybe
an interesting thought, because you could do a political science version of this. You could do a food version of this. Like, mm-hmm. There's so many different ways you could approach it.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of hope that the class maybe delves into some of that. I mean, every time real life starts to, even if it's just the perception, starts to get closer to our fiction, that stuff suddenly takes on a lot of new meaning, right? Like when things get weird in politics or in government or in international whatever, suddenly Game of Thrones is like, oh, interesting. That person reminds me of, I don't know, one of those horrible kings from House whatever. And
we're comparing some politicians to some characters right now in our house. I'll tell you that. We're like, oh, and there's so-and-so.
Mm-hmm. We do it when my wife talks about work. And she'll talk about coworkers. I'm like, oh, so they're being Khaleesi now. You know, like, it just becomes the template for everything.
Khaleesi's not
so bad.
She's
coming in breathing fire all over everybody.
As long as nobody's, you know, going full Drogo and dumping hot molten gold on your head, you'll be fine.
Oh, that happens a lot at my wife's workplace.
Does it? Yeah. Oh, man. The Rotten Tomatoes Fandango people, they are going all out.
They're known for dumping molten gold everywhere.
Yeah, two things I know about Rotten Tomatoes. Aggregated reviews. And molten gold on the head.
Jumping molten gold on the head.
Yeah. Aaron, any thoughts on classes there and how this is going to go?
I would be very interested to take this class. I think it'd be awesome. And I, like Tom, read the books before seeing the show. And I'm praying that Martin survives until the next episode is released.
Yeah. I mean,
I'd take this class.
This stuff you're going to get in the new season, which is off. A little off topic here, but that it's Tom, correct me if I'm wrong, but all of it outside of maybe a little thing here or there is new. Like, none of it is book based in terms of there's no book to represent what this next season is.
Season, I mean, we had a lot of that last season, but this season, everything is from Martin's notes, not from his books.
Yeah. So,
at least the books we couldn't buy. Anyway.
I have read the books now since, and as someone who's very interested in seeing that through, I'm more excited than ever just to see what happens. Like, I want to see what this two half season things look like. And then when that book finally hits, assuming it hits, how that gets all fleshed out and how much more we might get. And then these rumors floating around that they've got five potential spinoffs in the works. Does that mean that Harvard will have to have five potential new classes?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's going to be a major pretty soon.
All right. I'm all in for all of this. None of this sounds bad to me. People, if you complain that there's more Game of Thrones coming, or there's five potential prequel style, different parts, different time things of the world, and you have a problem with that, then I say poop on you, because that sounds rad to me. I'm stoked.
Yeah, I got my degree in Bravos Finance. I don't know if you really
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Do you still have your paperweight on your desk with the headless sword guy and a little coin goes around? Is that how it works at your place?
Yeah, I'm still paying the Lannisters for my student loan.
Well, they always keep their – no, they pay their debts. Though.
Pay their debts.
Yeah.
hey, Apple had its WWDC keynote this week among the many, many, many announcements in the 2.5-hour keynote. Amazon Prime Video coming to Apple TV sometime later this year. iOS 11 is going to have an augmented reality dev kit called AR Kit, peer-to-peer payments, an Apple Cash Card, redesigned App Store. There's a couple of new iPads coming out, the 10.5-inch iPad Pro, new MacBook Pros and iMacs, basically with processor and video card refreshes. A new iMac Pro with like heavy-duty Xeon processors and Radeon Vega graphics cards. That's coming in December for $5,000. And the one most people are still talking about, the HomePod, which is Apple's new smart speaker with Siri built in, coming in December for $349.
Okay, so something I haven't been able to ask you, even on Daily Tech News Show, I kind of forgot to do it this week. Because we talked a lot about sort of the pro and the features that artists are looking for and that kind of stuff. And I forgot to bring this up. The HomePod, which everybody assumes, and maybe even Apple assumes, is directly aimed at your Echo market, your Google Home market, the Home Assistant market.
Right.
Because it has Siri involved. Sorry if anyone's phones just went off. Mine didn't.
Well, you didn't say hey, and yeah. then say,
yes, that's, yeah, that's so true.
Should be okay.
Sometimes all I have to say is Larry Davis, and it'll go off. But anyway, if that's true, it felt like to me the presentation was, hey, we have a, if you look at it this way, not very expensive. If you look at it from the Home Assistant point of view, it's kind of expensive. If you look at it from, this is a fancy Sonos speaker competitor. Like a major Bluetooth speaker competitor that is very focused on music and sound quality and the many tweeters and the many woofers and the all of that stuff. It seemed to me like they were pushing this as that kind of product and that, oh, and it also has all this Siri functionality. Am I wrong about that impression? Because everybody wants to say, oh, it's too much money. My Echoes are much cheaper. I'll just get a bunch of dots and a single thing from Amazon, and that's all I ever want. And I'm like, I'm not sure that's what they're selling here. Or am I just buying the lie that is them knowing that Siri's not up to snuff yet and that they're kind of weaseling me from another angle?
I wouldn't call it a lie.
All right.
But you're definitely buying their positioning.
Okay.
Two Sonos speakers will cost you $348. Mm. How about that? So you could buy a two pack from Sonos for the same price as one HomePod. I think it's very smart of Apple when they know that Siri isn't seen as up to snuff compared to the Google Assistant and Amazon Voice services to say, hey, we here at Apple are known for music. We're known for iTunes. We're known for Apple Music. And we've got a great speaker. It sounds better than any of these other Amazon Echo, Google Home speakers out there. Here's why it's so good. And you should buy it from that. Of course, it's going to have Siri on it. Yeah, you can do some other stuff with it. That's fine. Mm. I think that's a really smart position for them to sell this because if that's what you want, that is what you'll get. Where it doesn't become a lie, but where it definitely is heavy spin is this really a great speaker? Mm. And I'm still waiting to hear some definitive reviews from that. And I think people just have to spend a lot more time with it before that can be determined. How good of a speaker is this compared to Bose, compared to Sonos, compared to some of these other cheap high-end audio speakers?
Right. Well, I guess time will tell. Aaron, thoughts on this hot new piece of business? Anything in there interest you, by the way? Anything they talked about?
Yeah, it really did. And of course, I thought when I first heard it, this is a very expensive Alexa or Dot.
And now you set off everyone's.
Oh, I'm sorry. Didn't even think about that.
No, we got Siri. We got Amazon. We just got to get somebody to set off the Google Home. We'll be good.
Yeah, everything will be fine. You almost could say, okay. All right. I'm going to stop there. Anyway.
But I was disappointed with the keynote this time. I was, you know, there's been a lot of buzz about everything Apple's about to do with the podcast market. And that's where I focus most of my attention. And I was really fired up for a lot of the new stuff coming out for the podcast. And, you know, I saw the screenshots of the new podcast app, which is fantastic, but I was really hoping for more podcast news this time.
Yeah. They're still your, I mean, I hate to say this, because I think it's good for competition to have more of a stranglehold, but iTunes and podcasts and that stuff still matter. Like, it's a huge portion of the audience, and you have to not cater to them, but you know, they're always there and it's an important thing. And I think Apple misses the boat when they don't throw a ton of support behind a thing that was basically birthed in their backyard.
Yeah.
And when you start to see other companies or others take better notice of that stuff, or you see other apps with better features. And this is probably true across the board. You know, there's always an app that does things better than your baked in one, whether you're on Android or iOS. There's somebody somewhere is making a much cooler app, better calendar app, or a better podcast app or something. And I understand that, but I just wish I felt like they loved it as much as we love it. the way they used to. In 06, I felt like they were like, yeah, we're in on this. And then since then, it's just like, man, they kind of sort of support it. And it's just sort of there. And there's a whole store category and it's fine, but it's not quite, you know, it's not everything. Yeah. I totally understand that. What else? Oh, Tani, any thoughts on anything they showed? You want all this stuff, all this hardware?
All this hardware? I mean, I am traditionally kind of the Mac girl. I'm a little bit excited about seeing those like sound stuff, but it's kind of the same thing. I agree completely. All my thoughts were pretty much articulated. I don't think I have anything to add. I'm like, yep, pretty much.
Yeah, a lot of updates and stuff. Even like the iMac Pro, you could sit and talk about all of its capabilities and what it would do for people. But in the end of the day, almost everything here outside of the smart speaker, which again is just coming late to a smart speaker market, it felt like just updates. Like nothing here was like, maybe we should stop expecting the one more thing, Tom. Maybe, you know.
Well, they had one more thing. It was the HomePod.
It was, but maybe that should not, how do I put this? It's on us. I'm not blaming Apple, okay? They established this, and now we have our expectations, and this comes around every time there's a new thing where they get up on stage. So it's old news, but maybe we got to stop expecting the iPhone in 07 every time, because that was absolutely mind-blowing and the biggest one more thing Steve Jobs could have ever done. It was incredible, and it changed phones forever, and that's great, and they deserve that credit, but we can't expect it every 6 months when they get up on a stage and talk about their, you know, Tim Cook talking about his products. Because that's our same products.
I'll be honest, as somebody who's been following this for a long time, this felt like a more substantial announcement than most. Yeah. And was unusual for a WWDC announcement because they actually announced new products, which a lot of times they just focus on the OS improvements. So, I mean, we didn't talk a lot about what's going into iOS, especially for the iPad, where it's going to get a lot of multitasking support. Like there's some really cool announcements, but like you say, none of them are earth shattering.
Right.
None of them are iPhone. And yeah, you only have an iPhone or an iPad or even an iPod announcement every so often.
Yeah, that's true. I will say that the new Mac or iMac Pro is really, really sweet if it just had a drawing surface. Oh, and by the way, the other day, maybe some people are still listening to this that listen to DTNS on Wednesday. I should have made this point then. I don't need Mac OS to have touch support. What I need is for the iMac Pro to have driver support for its display that behaves like a Wacom tablet. That's all. Doesn't have to be a touchscreen OS any more than it is now running my Wacom on this iOS or on this Mac OS machine. Mm-hmm. So I should have made that point then. So it's silly to make it now, but there it is. Like all our stories, well, there are good ones in there, partly because people send them in. Tom, that happened again this week. Who was it and why?
It sure did. Thank you to Captain Kipper, Jeff Rose, and Dileth, who are among the people who submitted stories on currentgeek.reddit.com. And big thanks to every single person who voted. That's how we choose them, which ones you guys are given the most interest to. So don't forget, get in there every week, every day, every minute of every hour. Don't sleep. Go vote on currentgeek.reddit.com.
Wow. Go ahead and sleep, though. It's fine. You guys can sleep.
Okay, maybe take a nap.
Nap. You need a little bit. It turns out our bodies need it. But other than that, Tom, everything said by Tom, I agree with. All right, let's take a minute here and talk to our guests about some of the projects they're working on. We like to take a little interview break during the show and find out what's up. So, Tani, tell us about your work, your podcasting work in particular. What's going on over there?
Yeah, we actually are just releasing an episode on Peggy Guggenheim coming up on Tuesday. But for those who don't know, the Dirty Bits podcast, it's basically a podcast that explores the little known sexy scandals of history all the way from the beginning up until we kind of cut it off at about 70 years ago. We generally want everybody to have passed before we start gossiping about them.
Are you, I'm very curious about this. Do you guys find that there's always, is it just a fountain of information you're always finding more and more? Or have you ever worried like, man, are we going to run out of sex scandals from the 1800s?
Nope. Those people were filthy. Like, and everybody throughout history, all those people that you were taught about that were so wonderful and stately, they have some naughty, 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 naughty laundry in their closet. Dirty laundry.
I love that. I had no idea. And you're talking about famous people, people in government and high office and business, like it runs the whole gamut, I'm sure.
It runs the whole gamut. We started out with Catherine the Great, obviously. But then,
she was great for different reasons that I think I was taught in school, is what you're saying.
Yes.
She was a pretty awesome girlfriend, I must say. Like, if you do listen to the episode, she took care of her boyfriends.
Wow.
She was a great girlfriend. We've gone all the way to Marie Curie, which is surprising. Hans Christian Andersen had some secrets. Mm. And recently we just did Jack Parsons, who is involved with L. Ron Hubbard, Aleister Crowley, and NASA. So it's always this fun, surprising information. And it just started out with me laying in bed, and it really is like gossiping. Like, I'm on my phone and just in Wikipedia because I love to learn. And I will have started out looking up something random. Like, I'm like, do penguins have toes? You know, and I will like somehow end up on Catherine the Great. And I'm like, Catherine the Great did what? And, you know, and I'm talking to my husband. I'm like, oh, my God, do you know what John Wilmot wrote about King Charles back in the day? You will not believe this.
I love this. I love this so much because people have a need for celebrity gossip, right? Yeah, yeah. But it's so destructive in some ways to people's actual lives. So this is a great outlet where, like, get that need for celebrity gossip fulfilled in a way that only educates you about history.
Yeah,
exactly. That was my whole thought with it. As I was like, I feel like you could definitely get like a bottle of wine, listen to this, and just like dish, and it doesn't matter because they're dead.
Yeah, they're long dead. Sure, and it's educational because I wouldn't have known that about any of these people. Like, I wouldn't have guessed that Catherine the Great had this, you know, scurvious history. It's not even a word, scurvious, and there it is. I used it. So that's
a lot of people know the rumors, and the truth that they actually stem from is often more interesting. Like, there's this rumor about Catherine the Great with a horse.
Oh my gosh.
But it's not true. It's not true. And the factual information about her is so much more interesting. And the way that these historical figures often speak to each other, it's not that far off from how we talk now. Like, you can envision them like Snapchatting each other back and forth. Well, like, oh, that's so naughty. He thinks she's so pretty.
That was my other question is, does it help confirm that we're just the same as we've always been? We have this new way of talking, communicating, and everyone has a bullhorn now because of the internet, but we're really, as it boils down, kind of the same always, you know?
Yeah, people have gotten better, if anything, in my personal opinion and the research I've done. Like, I'm a total history nerd. I will read anything about history.
Yeah.
And from what I can tell, people have just gotten better, to be perfectly honest, or they're staying the same. John Wilmot, for one, he wrote just these, like, things that Facebook and Twitter would be like, you can't say that, you're banned, you know? And he was just, like, throwing them around court, and he's like, here's my poem, here's a dirty poem. And people thought it was hysterical, you know? Like, there's way more censorship now, I feel like. It's hysterical to me that people go on and on about, like, oh, you filthy kids doing these dirty things. And I'm like, did you look at, like, the 17th century?
Yeah. I don't know why this isn't on my podcast app, but I'm going to be listening. That sounds fantastic to me.
Thank you. I enjoy it a lot.
Yeah, I'll definitely check it out. Well, at the end of the show, we'll make sure to let people know where and how and where to search and where to find it. Of course, iTunes and that kind of stuff, but
everywhere.
We'll make a point of that a little bit later in the show. Aaron, tell us about what you got going on, man.
Well, I've got a podcast that we've had for about a year now called Weird, and we cover the strangest news stories from around the world twice a week, and it's really goofy, weird stuff. And we try to make sure that they're all true. You know, with Reddit and with the internet, a lot of times you bump into stuff that's not true. So we do try to make
you get real weird if you don't care about truth. Right. So you're like, no, this stuff is weird and also actually happened.
Yeah,
exactly. We have a car about a guy. I mean, a story about a guy that turned into a car. You know, we'll probably skip that one. But last week we did have a story of a drunk driver who handed the officer a half-eaten burrito out of her purse.
Yeah.
That's a true story. That's weird. That's the type of stuff we cover there.
Yeah. The truer they are, the weirder they get, I find.
It's the truth. Truth is stranger than fiction, I've found.
Yeah.
And I've got a new project, if I can mention that. Sure. We're going to start. We've got the first 5 episodes recorded. We're going to release them into the wild next Friday, 1 week from today, June the 16th, I believe. It's called Wisecracked Radio Hour, and we took the idea of Mystery Science Theater 3000, and we've taken it to the audio version, where we found a bunch of public domain radio dramas from
Oh, that's fun. Yeah.
And we're just kind of, we've written a script to put us kind of in the story, but we make fun of all the old radio dramas.
It's been a lot of fun recording. Tom and I have been bouncing ideas back and forth for a long time about what to do with old timey radio. We both enjoy that stuff.
We enjoy doing an old timey radio voice. I'm not going to say we're good at it, but we both enjoy doing it.
You're both very good.
We get a real kick out of ourselves for sure, but we've never figured out where we're going to apply it. We've had ideas here and there. Sounds like you guys found a really cool idea. That's awesome take, man.
Yeah. I'm doing that one with a buddy named Sean Rourke, and he's as much of a Scott Johnson fan as I am, and he's just thrilled right now knowing that his co-host is talking to Scott Johnson and Tom here on the Current Geek Show.
Tell him he should get on here sometime. We'll get him as a guest as well. We'd be happy.
Yeah, get in touch with him.
I'll be on.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's awesome. Again, we'll talk at the end of the show about where people can find your fine work and all the shows you're working on. But for right now, folks, a quick message from HelloFresh. All right, here's how I know I think I eat better than you guys at home do. Well, at least those of you who have not currently tried HelloFresh before. If you've tried HelloFresh.com, then you know what I'm talking about. Man, it is the best meal delivery kit I've ever used. Delivered straight to my door, making cooking fun for me so I can focus on the entire experience, not just the final plate. Each week, HelloFresh creates delicious new recipes and step-by-step instructions. It's a piece of cake. In 30 minutes or less, there I am with food on the plate going, look at me, everybody. I'm some kind of crazy awesome cook, even though I'm not really. They make me look like I am. HelloFresh sources only the freshest ingredients. They measure it all to the exact quantities that you need, so there's no waste in any of that food. Everything's delivered straight to your door in a recyclable, insulated box, fresh and ready to go. They're now offering light spring meals and just introduced breakfast options. The whole thing can be like less than 10 bucks a meal. It's not just for one, by the way. I feed like three people at a shot, so it's crazy affordable. We've teamed up with HelloFresh to make it even more affordable so that everyone in our audience can get $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code CURRENTGEEK30. That's $30 off your first week of deliveries with the code CURRENTGEEK30 at HelloFresh.com. I love every meal I've gotten. Too numerous to pick a favorite. Not kidding either. It's all amazing. HelloFresh.com and the code CURRENTGEEK30. Save that money. Have some good food. Very important thing coming up. That is, not eluding me on my desktop. There we go. It is the pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
All right. This is the pop quiz where you guys get tested in areas of your expertise. If you get an answer right, you're going to hear this sound. When you get it wrong, you'll hear this. Tom will add the whole thing up and tell you who won at the end of the run. Your categories have been chosen by Hammond Chamberlain. He may have warned you. I don't know.
Or may have not.
May not have. Tawny, I'm going to start with you.
Okay.
Your topic is songs sung in Lord of the Rings.
I'm ready. I got some Eagle on my shirt.
All right. Sweet. I'm very excited then. This is going to be fun. So let's see how you do. One quick warning, or not warning, but Tom, the way Tom scores this is out of anyone's understanding. It's like a weird dimension he's working on.
It takes a few decades of study to understand the rules of scoring.
Which means we're
the
decades. Yeah.
The one thing I will say is that you will not be required to sing any of the songs yourself. Two points.
Yeah.
Though if you did, you likely would.
We are literally decades away from understanding it, according to Tom. So here is the first question. What song does Aragorn sing to the hobbits to calm their fears when they are in Weathertop?
When they're in Weathertop, what was the song called?
Shut up and go to sleep.
It was close,
though. It was something along those lines.
Rub and put your hairy feet.
Just as I recall, yeah.
Hairy feet and go to sleep. Those things rhyme, so that's pretty good. Not bad.
I don't remember the name of the song for the life of me.
That's all right. The correct answer is Song of Beren and Lethelion, or Lethine.
Elvish, because it's an Elvish song.
Oh. We're gonna give a half point because hairy feet are barren.
There you go.
I think that's fair.
Yeah,
they're barren. They're barren of any footwear. Is how you're saying
exactly.
Here's the next question. What character sings Brie sorry, Brigald's song to the Two Towers, or in the Two Towers.
The Brigald song in the Two Towers?
Yeah.
I think that is that Saruman?
You are incorrect. The answer is Ent Briagald. I guess actually he did it. Dude's song named after the Ent who sang it. Yeah, I don't remember that at all.
Oh.
I don't remember that either, and I have the whole extended Blu-ray DVD edition. Yeah. So
I don't even know if that happened in the movies, strictly in the
Maybe
books,
it's
or
just
what.
Just in the book that he does it.
Yeah,
then.
I was strictly the film nerd.
We're gonna give you a quarter point trick question bonus then.
Yeah, quarter point. That's not bad. What song does Pippin sing to the King of Gondor in the Return of the King film?
Oh, I do know that one. That one is "Home is behind the world ahead." There it's. May have to tread.
Do you know the name?
All Shall Fade.
Let's find out. Is it that? Incorrect. It is.
I can sing every single lyric too. That's what sucks.
It is called A Walking Song is the name of the song. Very close though. Tom and
But she gets a point for attempting to sing the song.
Yeah, I'm impressed.
Sing the whole song.
Can you really? Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
Do I have to sit and eat grapes really disgustingly while you do it?
Yeah, you have to.
I think it was cherry tomatoes.
Oh yeah, it was cherry tomatoes. It's the guy from Fringe. Oh, he grossed me out. Anyway.
Oh, he's the grossest.
He's pretty gross. What song does Bilbo sing on his return to the Shire?
On his return to the Shire. Yeah. So is this a book question?
It sounds
a Hobbit question.
It sounds booky to me.
Yeah, there's some book questions sneaked in here.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, he didn't return from the Shire in the Lord of the Rings.
We didn't see him do it. Yeah.
I'll give you a hint. It has to do with something with a road. If that helps.
A road.
It is road related.
Is it the long road ahead? Is it the winding road?
It's so close. I'm going to say, but the answer is the road goes ever on, which is kind of like saying long road, Tom. I don't know.
Yeah, and the Long and Winding Road is a great song. So we're throwing a half point for that.
I like this game.
Yeah, this game's great. We're
on
famous.
The road again, said Hammond.
On the road again, yeah. What character wrote the poem, quote, "All that is gold does not glitter"? And the hint I will give you is it was a hobbit.
Was it Smeagol?
You are... Hold on. Incorrect. It was Bilbo Baggins.
It was Bilbo.
Yeah.
I know my friends are going to be listening to this and be like, "You sham of a fan."
I don't know. Bilbo and Smeagol are like, you know, they're almost twins.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a whole. See, you could do a Harvard class on that right there.
You could. You know? That's true. Yeah. They're like, there's an allegory for that. It's like Cain and Abel. They were like,
they're each other's complementary doppelganger.
Yeah.
Juxtaposed character.
Yeah, it's the old Jesus and Lucifer
Mary
thing,
Jane.
Right? Yeah, same idea. All right, well, those are your questions. Well done. We're going to see how Aaron does in comparison. Aaron, you have been delivered this category, Knight Rider trivia.
Oh, crap.
All right. It's got a good...
The songs of Knight Rider in particular.
Yeah. Yeah, it's only the songs of Knight Rider. David Hasselhoff, no. So here's your stuff. Utah Connection, because they filmed the intro out here in the Salt Flats. Just always like to mention that. Knight Rider trivia begins with this question. How many seasons of the original Knight Rider were made?
I'm going to guess 4.
You are correct. Nicely done.
Damn.
4 is
Damn.
Pretty good for a guess, too. How about this one? Who created Knight Rider? Again, a Utah Connection, but I won't tell you what.
Let's see. Knight Rider was created. I have no idea.
I'm going to say that you're right, that you have no idea, but the answer is Glenn A. Larson. He also brought us Battlestar Galactica, Manimal, and a bunch of other stuff.
So you're going to get a full point for question confusion because it was not made clear if it was in-universe who created Knight Rider or who created the show.
Yeah.
Yes.
But then you're going to lose a quarter point because we did cover this on autopilot.
Yeah, good point. We did, didn't we? That's right. He also created Magnum P.I. is the other one I couldn't think of. And others, but those are his big ones. What car model was used for Kit?
Trans Am.
You are... Hold on, my mouse is... There we go. You are correct. It was the Pontiac Firebird Trans Am. A hot car when I was a kid. Not so much now. Kind of dumb looking now. Anyway... second to last question. Two voice actors played the evil car in the series. One was Peter, one was Paul Frees. Who was the other?
I have no idea. Paul McCartney.
You are incorrect. The other was Peter Cullen. I almost gave it away. Peter Cullen, the voice of Optimus Prime, was the voice of Carr. And I remember loving Carr.
You almost got it right by saying you had no idea. And then you said Paul McCartney. So.
I never know when to stop.
Hello. Nothing we can do.
I'm a car. That's the worst Paul McCartney you've ever heard. Pretend you didn't hear it. All right.
I'm a car.
Fine. There you go. That's better. You got the Liverpool thing going. I couldn't do it. Okay, final question. Who composed the theme song for Knight Rider?
David Hasselhoff.
That'd be so awesome. But incorrect. The answer is Stu Phillips. Stu Phillips.
Oh.
Wasn't much of a theme. Yeah, it's really not much.
Or is that Bonanza?
That's Bonanza, but... That's fine. I enjoyed your Bonanza Knight Rider combo that you just did. That was really good. That's it for your questions. That means we need to see how you guys did. Tom, how'd they do?
We ended up with Tawny 2.75, Aaron 2.75.
Oh my gosh. We haven't had a tie in a long time. That's great. How long has it been? Forever since we had a tie. Good job, you guys.
Week.
Yeah, maybe it was just last week. Who knows? All right, well done. Time for forecast.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
All right, here's the deal. This used to be a show, but it's now a segment where we predict the future in pop culture, technology, entertainment, whatever. And we got one from Tom. Tom, you picked this week. What'd you get there?
Yeah, so there was some news today that a bunch of companies in Japan are cooperating on creating self-piloting cargo ships. They think by 2025, they can have cargo ships that just float themselves across the water to whatever port they're headed to. And apparently, there's a lot of companies working on this. Some think they can do it even sooner. So my prediction is that self-driving transportation, self-driving trucks, self-piloting cargo ships, etc., will become the big success story for autonomous vehicles. They'll make it even easier to order things from anywhere in the world and know where they are. You'll like with Uber and Lyft, you'll be able to see where your package is, wherever it is in the world. While self-driving cars with humans are going to take a lot longer to become a reality.
Okay. I like this. Partially because Logan supports your hypothesis. In Logan, people were driving cars, but they were driving them on highways and freeways that were littered with cargo trucks, you know, semis that were autonomous, that were just being run by computer in some near future scenario.
For a minute, I thought you were talking about Logan's Run. No. Yes, Logan.
Yes, right. Logan the Wolverine Logan.
Yes.
And I loved that because it's the first time in a movie where I was presented with a potential future technology that didn't feel that far off to me. I saw that and went, yep, that's where we're absolutely heading there. In fact, it'll be probably sooner than I think.
I mean, no, that has been done. They have actually done exactly what they showed in the movie in real life. It's just not a common thing. It's not a thing you can just see on the road when you're driving.
But I'll bet in the next 5 years, I'll take a trip to Vegas from where I live. It takes about 5 hours, and there's always a million trucks on the road on that route. And I'll bet that will be when I'll start to see multiples of those at a time. And I think that's awesome.
What if you've ordered something and you realize it's actually in that truck that you're passing?
Oh, my gosh, dude.
And you can have it like open a drone, fly out of the truck and bring it to your car on the road.
Please keep your eyes on the road. Open your sunroof. Here's be careful. Here's your thing. No, I'm in for that. That'd be fine. I mean, however they want to do it. Do it, but the tracking is very interesting. Autonomous vehicles, I'm excited about those from a sort of human transportation standpoint. But I feel like it's intuitive to think that we're definitely going to get cargo first, people next, and how well cargo goes may have an effect on how quickly we get the people thing, as a standard, common, everyday sort of thing. So, our guests, do you guys, Aaron, where do you stand on autonomous vehicles?
I really don't think about it that much, except when it's in the news. But Tom's prediction, I'm gonna get behind it. I think I could see that playing out exactly as he predicts.
You might literally get behind it on the freeway.
Yeah, you might get stuck behind it.
Yeah, you might be behind the first one that decides to break down. The other thing I like about those, and Logan showed this as well, I think, but when they do go down, they don't have the human aspect of I'm gonna spin wildly and jackknife. They just and they stop. Right?
I don't think that's the human thing either.
Well,
I think they jackknife because of like weather conditions.
No, I mean, I've seen too many movies probably, but yeah, I mean, it feels like when the human part of the sliding on the ice, I trust that less than I do a robot doing it, because the robot will just either have sort of pre-programmed reaction stuff built in, but there's no emotion involved. It's not going to panic. It's not going to try to turn the wrong direction and turn away from the spin or whatever. Like, that stuff makes me feel better. And anytime there's anything on the internet or on the news or anything about a autonomous vehicle having an accident, I get annoyed, because it's one accident while, you know, 30,000 others happened the hour before on highways across America because people are dumb. I'm ready for my robot drivers. And if it's cargo first, fine, but hurry up. I don't want to pay for a new car. I want to pay for a monthly service where a robot picks me up and takes me where I want to go.
Oh, preach.
Yep. Tani, do you want to, I mean, how soon do you want this? Or I guess, how soon do you think we're going to get it? Because I think we all agree it's coming. It's just a matter of when.
We just need to be prepared for it. We need to be set up for universal basic income as far as that goes, because that's what 40% of the occupations are through transportation. Mm. So if you have that be something that's, you know, self-automated, self-driving, that's just going to cut out 40% of the jobs. So we have to be prepared for that. And, you know, it does seem like it's just happening faster and faster and faster. This morning they were saying, I was on Reddit this morning, and I think they said that it was Canada, that like within the next 10 years, they're going to be like, or the next 2 months or something like that, they're like really releasing them. The next 10 years, they're expecting it to be just like all self-driving cars. Mm. I'd have to find that article. It was very early this morning. But I mean, that's all I foresee really happening, is just that kind of transition over. We're just moving faster.
That's why it can't happen overnight. I mean, which would be, I mean, that would just completely collapse an economy if suddenly overnight somebody like Elon Musk got up and said, hey, we figured it out. It's all good. Both Hyperloop and self-driving cars are done. We're rolling them out this month. I mean, if that was possible, it's not really possible. But if it was, it would just, everything would fall apart probably, I would think.
It doesn't even need to be like, it doesn't even need to be overnight, because the fact of the matter is, it's like, if we're not preparing for that now, then that is going to just create chaos. You know, you have to be putting those replacement jobs or, you know, setups into place right now. Otherwise, it will just be like one morning you wake up and you're like, oh my God, my job is gone.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Tom? You were about to...
Well, I mean, look at the computer revolution. That had exactly the same threat to computers. Computers were people. Mm-hmm. They were people called computers. The word originally referred to the people who did the computing. And computers overnight-ish pretty rapidly replaced them. And you had to figure out, okay, now that these people aren't doing that, what do we have them do? And we created a whole new section of jobs and customer service that we couldn't afford to do before, because we had to pay these people to be computers. So you're absolutely right. We need to figure out, okay, you know, when we don't need to have somebody sitting there kind of unproductively behind the wheel of a car, what can we have them do? What other things in transportation can we not do right now, because it's too expensive to pay someone to do that? And now that we've got the freedom to have them do something else, what is that?
It's also easy for us to sit back and think that the automated car future will be self-sustaining, in that all of its maintenance, all of its everything is just going to be sort of handled by the robots themselves. And I don't think that's the case.
Eventually. Yeah, no, absolutely.
So hopefully new jobs crop up around it. New ways of thinking about it, supporting it, whatever. I'm a firm believer in that.
You have to train people. You have to figure out what those jobs are and how they can be expected. But I mean, Mad Men, the series, dealt with this, where people are like, this is going to throw me out of a job. And yes, it did, but it didn't eliminate jobs. It just, it's always disruptive. And you have to, like you're saying, Tawny, you have to actually approach it carefully, so that you're like, hey, you know, we can now move people into doing something else. Let's handle that response.
Yeah, let's think about it now. Exactly.
Yeah. We don't want to be the horses that cars replace so that we're a luxury item.
Yeah.
right.
To the AI.
They became our, that's a really good point. That's a really interesting point.
Not to sound all crazy conspiracy
theory. No, it's good. They all became the best glue, though. Oh, man, the glue revolution. Oh. See, look, I love horses. This is Scott joking over here. Anyway, hey, we got feedback. We get these emails on the show. It's crazy how this works. We ask for them and you guys send them. currentgeek@gmail.com. We got one from Daniel, who says this: Dear Current Geek, do you guys think we might be in the David Thewlis golden age? If you don't know who this is, it's going to sound weird. Wonder Woman, his incredible turn on Fargo this season, Anomalisa, I think is how you say it, etc. Seems like his ship has come in and he's really incredible. A fan from New Hampshire, no hobbits here, Daniel.
Man, I've got to admit that I made a grievous error on the Cord Killer show this Monday when Brian Brushwood said, wasn't it crazy to see Vargas in Wonder Woman? And I'm like, oh, no, that was Lupin from Harry Potter.
Also
true. Turns out we were both right because David Thewlis played all of them.
Yeah, he was Professor Lupin, third year at Hogwarts, dark arts teacher, amazing turn there. Everything he's been in, I've always liked, I've always enjoyed. I've seen a number of very small movies that no one knows about that he's in. But his turn on Fargo this season, I am with Daniel on this. He is a revelation.
I totally forgot it was him. I totally did not recognize that.
He is a revelation on the show. Like, incredible. Yeah, and I still don't know what they're doing with him. I'm a couple episodes behind, but man, he's good. So maybe, I mean, the only complaint I have about him in Wonder Woman, is it a spoiler to say who he was or what his role is? It probably is.
Maybe.
All right, well, I'm not going to say. I won't say what that
is. You were disappointed by his role.
Yeah. Most people just were disappointed by his mustache, but I have no problem with it. I think it's pretty great. Are you guys fans? Tawny, do you know who this guy is and do you like him?
A little bit. It's not, you know, it's not to the extent of some other nerdy, geeky things, but mm-hmm. I'm enjoying Fargo. I'm not as like into it as some other stuff. And then Wonder Woman was amazing.
It was great. Yeah.
Everybody knows that. Yeah.
It was really good. It's got us. Somebody said something really funny on a thread. I wish I could remember exactly what it said, but it said, it was like a Reddit thread or somewhere. Somebody said, I feel like this movie, this Wonder Woman movie might be sending the wrong messages to our young people. And somebody got all mad and said, what do you mean? I thought they were talking about women's empowerment or
just
violence.
Just jumped to a conclusion about what they were talking about.
Yeah, and they didn't include that. And they questioned them really hard on it. It says, no, none of that, because they listed all these things. It says, none of that, that DC will keep making quality movies after this one.
I saw that on Reddit. I knew there was a punchline. I'm like, damn, what is that?
It was really funny. It cracked me up so hard. Aaron, do you know this guy? You know David Thewlis, and do you like his work?
I love his work. And I think what he's doing in Fargo is the most interesting character since probably Billy Bob Thornton's.
Oh, yeah. By far. Like, he's, I didn't even expect it. The minute I saw him, I went, what is he doing in this? And what is this about? And I am in awe of him in there. Yeah. He's so good.
Incredible.
So we agree, Daniel. Hey, he's pretty great. Hopefully we'll see more of it. I always like to see these guys find their niche in their, you know, 50s and 60s. There's something about that that I like. Like,
it gives us hope.
Well, it's that's just what, like, we ignore. Is that what it is? That's probably what it is. That's probably what it is. They become their most interesting when you think they should be getting close to, like, not being relevant at all. And
not at all. I feel like that's actually like your prime. Like, if you look at so many actors, like, that's when they do become famous, or like when they do really incredible work. Like, mm-hmm. if you look at Dame Judi Dench, mm-hmm. and, you know, you look at his name escapes me, Snape.
Alan Rickman.
Alan Rickman. I'm so excited to be on Current Geek. I've just been blanking this whole time. I'm going to be so embarrassed when I get off. I'm like,
I'm the one who told the Vargas wasn't David Thewlis on Monday. So
yeah,
I'm not
so don't feel bad.
There you go.
Don't feel bad. If you put Professor Lupin up next to Vargas, you would not say they were the same people.
It's unrecognizable.
Yeah, it's crazy how he's sunk into that role, but. Anyway,
I personally like that's when I find that some, and that might just be kind of like weirdo me, but I feel like that is some of the best work. I mean, that's when you've lived your life. That's when you're experienced things. That's when you have all this knowledge and all this experience. Why wouldn't you be putting out like the best work?
That's a really good point. I hadn't thought of it that way. I mean, you're taking the culmination of everything you've learned, even if you have been acting your entire life, you know, mm-hmm. that can somehow come out later and just, I don't know. There is something about that, but he's great, and may he ever.
There's a maturity there that younger people don't have.
Yeah, I agree. Well, think of that, young people. We sound really old when we say that. Thank you for the email, Daniel. Everybody, remember currentgeek@gmail.com is where you send your thoughts, your feelings, and your questions. So send them. We'd be happy to read them on the show. That is going to do it for today's episode. Before we get out of here, though, big, huge thanks to our guest, Aaron. I'd like to start with you. Where can people find your work, sir?
Just go to weirdnewspodcast.com.
Oh, it's simple and easy. I like this. It's not some crazy URL. It's normal and great. So go to there and find it and check it out. And it's really great to have you on the show, man. Thanks for being here.
I've totally enjoyed this. Can't wait to come back.
Tawny, where can people find more of your fine work?
You can find me at Tawny, my first name, Tawny, voice.com. And then all the links are there right under the Dirty Bits tab. So you can add us on all those lovely social media sites and listen to us wherever it is most convenient for you.
Cool. And when you do your voice acting, is there anything that we can give people hints of where they could hear you sometime if they were just happen to catch a commercial or something? We're like, oh, there's Tawny again. I heard her on the show once.
Yeah. So if you happen to go on the Similac website, the introduction video about their wonderful oligosaccharide formula that's now available, you'll be able to hear my voice. That'll be me. And then in upcoming video game Project Eterne, I'm playing a couple of some fierce fighting Wonder Woman type of ladies.
Oh, very cool.
Fantastic.
Oh, I love that.
Thank you.
Love that stuff. So cool. Well, Tom Barrett, that brings it down to us. Do you have anything you'd like to say before we go?
Yeah, I'll just be knocking back some Similac later.
Gotta get that oligosaccharide.
Yeah, exactly. If you're, there are any Twin Peaks fans out there, I just want to remind you, Ron Richards and I are doing a watch along. We rewatched the first two seasons from the 90s earlier this year. You can get all those on a podcast and new episodes every week as the new series airs on Showtime. You can find it at damnfinepodcast.com.
Please do. Also, a note to viewers and listeners, if you like E3 and you're into video game coverage this week, as E3 begins actually this Saturday, which is crazy. We're getting an EA conference on Saturday and then all kinds of coverage through Tuesday, Wednesday. Check out the schedule at frogpants.tv for when we will be doing live video talk-alongs with the various conferences. So it'll be myself, Patrick Beja, and quite often people like Brian Dunaway, John Jagger will all be in there talking about what's happening on stage, interpreting that, and having a good time in there. We'll be doing it live, also putting it on podcast feeds. All that details and information will be at frogpants.com. Best place to go, though, is frogpants.tv. Click on the schedule link, and you'll see the times and all that good stuff. It's going to do it for us. Thank you all for being here. It's been a great episode. What should I tell you? Currentgeek.com is our website. You should go there. It's a great place to be. All the things you need to know right there. Currentgeek.com. Currentgeek@gmail.com is our email address. Use it frequently. Thank you everybody for listening. For me, for Tom, and for our guests. We'll see you next time. Sort of. There we go.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we review another recent Supreme Court decision that clarified rules of patent exhaustion and first sale, Impression Products v. Lexmark, as well as its likely effects. We then opine on the main show's discussion last week of whether this can be extended to copyright contexts like the John Deere tractor software. The doctrine of patent exhaustion is a limit on the scope of a patent owner's rights. Although a patent owner has the right to economically capitalize on a patented product, that right is exhausted after the patent owner sells a product because the economic benefit has been received. In other words, bona fide purchasers of patented products can be free to use or sell their purchased product as they wish, without threat of being accused for infringement of the patent. There were two questions about patent exhaustion brought to the Supreme Court by how Lexmark does business. First, Lexmark had a discount program called the Return Program, where cartridges were sold at a lower price, subject to contractual agreement that the buyer would return the cartridge when empty, and not transfer the cartridge to anyone other than Lexmark. Lexmark argued that these contractual restrictions allowed it to sue third-party resellers like Impression, who bought these Return Program cartridges and then refilled and resold them. The court disagreed with Lexmark on this point in an 8-0 decision. In short, the court ruled that a patent owner's decision to sell a product exhausts all patent rights in that item, regardless of any restrictions placed in contracts associated with the sale. While Lexmark may be able to pursue breach of contract claims, there is no patent infringement claim in this circumstance, thanks to exhaustion. These types of post-sale restrictions in sale contracts and licenses have become common in the last 20 years. So there will be a lot of adjustments made in these commercial licenses and sale agreements to account for this clarification of the rules. Second, Lexmark would sell their cartridges in other countries at different, often lower rates, and Impression would buy those cartridges and import them back to the US to sell them at higher prices, while undercutting Lexmark's prices here. Lexmark argued that this importation and sale could be stopped as a patent infringement. The court also disagreed with Lexmark here in a 7-1 decision. The majority drew parallels to the Kurtzsang copyright decision from 2013 on the first sale doctrine as it applies to foreign sales of textbooks. The court found no reason to treat first sales in patent and copyright differently, so patent exhaustion again applies to exhaust all rights of the patent owner after a sale, regardless of whether that sale is in the U.S. or not. Considering that many industries beyond printer companies sell products at differing rates based on the economies of the countries they sell in, this may cause a significant shift in how patent owners price their products worldwide. The bottom line is, both of these parts of the decision make it clear that patent owners get one bite at the profit apple, so we should expect significant adjustments in how markets like the printer cartridge market works moving forward. Thanks to this decision, patent exhaustion applies clearly across the board, leaving companies to rely on other non-patent causes of action, like contracts, to control their marketplaces. Finally, in response to the main show's discussion about extending this decision to copyright contexts, such as John Deere's claims to control tractor software in their sold products, it's not that far of a stretch to imagine, thanks to the foreign sales part of the decision being largely based on a prior copyright decision. However, copyright provides a significantly different set of rights than patent, so while there are some parallel rules, like first sale doctrines, that are applied in both, there's no guarantee that courts will treat these different sets of rights in exactly the same way. In short, the legal arguments will continue on the different copyright issues, but I would expect all IP owners to adjust their business contracts and licenses to account for whatever limits may be applied to patent and copyrights, to cover themselves via contract law, if nothing else. If you will be at Nerdtacular in June, please come by and say hello. My firm is proud to be a sponsor of Nerdtacular 2017. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.